Welcome, everyone, to episode 228 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to check in on both of the conference finals series. We're also going to get Mort's hot takes about the draft lottery and the draft combine that went on this weekend, and we'll hit on some quick hitters around the league. Before we get to all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. So I haven't been fired. I was just off working really, really hard. So yeah, I had a couple of people asking me.
Yeah, well, congrats on surviving this week.
Thank you.
Sounded busy.
That's what you do when you launch a new phone.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll get your draft lottery takes in a little bit because we have not talked, at least on the podcast, since the lottery. But first, let's start with the conference finals. We'll start with the West because we're recording this on Saturday. So game three is tonight. The Warriors are up 2-0. The first game was, it was a blowout the whole time, but the Blazers kept themselves like sort of within striking distance. And then every time they really started to get within a margin where the Warriors would get nervous, Steph or Klay just hit a three and blew it back up to 15. So I'm going to refer to that as a blowout. Game two, Blazers come out really hot, take a 15-point lead at halftime. Then the Warriors, their typical third quarter surge happens. And then the Blazers just couldn't keep it going at the end. They had an 8-point lead with 4 minutes left, and the Warriors just blitzed them at the end of the game. The Warriors have announced that Kevin Durant is out for games 3 and 4. He will be reevaluated, I believe, right around game 5. But at this point, it almost seems like we should not expect Kevin Durant to be back in this series. Especially, I mean, maybe if the Blazers win these next two, then they rush him back a little more quickly. But this feels like he's probably not going to play again until the finals. Do you think the Blazers blew their best chance, Mort, to turn this into a series by losing game two? Do you think this is, you know, when we had Warriors-Rockets last round, the Warriors were also up 2-0 heading to Houston, and we thought the series was over, and then it turned into an actual competitive 6-game series. Do you see something similar happening here, or is it just like the Blazers had one chance, Kevin Durant was out, they were up 15, they were up 8 with 4 minutes left and couldn't get it done. And now this is gentleman sweep time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm leaning towards that second part. I'll say I hope we can have both in that sense that what this was their best chance at least evening this series. But I do hope that they'll come back and maybe take, you know, a game and then another game later on so we have a 6-gamer. I don't anticipate them going that route.
Yeah.
This could be a sweep, unfortunately. Yeah, I was really looking forward to you know, seeing this series because I've really been loving how Portland's played all year long, but I can't escape this feeling that I think most would agree with me in saying that Denver would probably have represented the better matchup against Golden State as opposed to Portland. So, you know, you took the whole win against Denver in round two and it was very exciting and this was very necessary for Portland as a franchise. Now you're getting clapped by a team that you just match up poorly with.
Yeah. I don't even know. I feel like the Warriors were just going to gentleman sweep either way. Like, maybe Denver is a little bit more competitive, but I think personnel-wise, both of these teams have similar strengths and weaknesses in that they both have really strong backcourts, Denver and Portland, I mean. Mm-hmm. They have good scoring centers. Jokic is obviously a much more well-rounded player than Cantor, but, you know, their forward depth is the weak spot of their game. So with Kevin Durant out, that would be less of an issue, but still you're relying on your high scoring backcourt to outscore Steph and Klay, which is just never going to happen.
But they have depth.
Yeah, they do have depth. And I want to get to there's been this theory kind of floating around, and I think Anthony Irwin the other week called it like the hipster Twitter theory, but then even Seth Curry said it the other night, of the idea that the Warriors are better without Kevin Durant. And not that they have more talent, because obviously they don't, but The ball moves more. I think I saw a stat that in game one they only had 3 isolations, which was the fewest they've ever had in a playoff game under Steve Kerr, something like that. Stephen Clay just running around more screens. There's more motion in general. Do you buy into this notion that the Warriors are harder to defend with Kevin Durant not on the floor?
To answer that question, we need to go back to, I think it was fourth grade for me.
Okay.
Because we had a pretty sweet football setup, and I'm talking about regular football here.
Mm-hmm.
So during, like, you know, the off hours, we were playing football with some of the other classes. And one day we got a new student in our class who was really, really good at football. And, of course, we saw that as a huge asset, and he was there for a couple of years. And we just struggled the hell out of it, even though we got significantly better because our chemistry was just way off. Here was one dude dominating the ball. Now, you can't apply that necessarily to KD, but what you can apply to it is you have this cohesive unit that is Steph, Clay, and Dre that won previously. Now you add a, you know, superior talent to that crew, which on paper is fine. And look, they won 2 championships, and so obviously it worked. And so yeah, the talent level was significantly higher than before, but the chemistry has been altered. Not necessarily in a bad way. Again, 2 titles, you know, 2-time defending champions right here, so you can't argue against the results.
Right.
But the chemistry is probably just a little bit altered. So when he's not present, this group, you know, the OG group, for all intents and purposes,
yeah,
can go back to playing their brand of basketball the way that they started out on the playground, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say they're better necessarily, just because they've said it too, having KD, like having that bailout weapon is a luxury for them.
Right.
Are they still very good without him? Yes. Are they more fun to... I think you could argue they're definitely more fun to watch without him, just because it's more fun to watch Steph and Clay cook than it is for KD to just beat up on guys who are smaller than him that have no chance and watch him ISO them to death. Like, you know, that's just kind of ruthless. It's not necessarily the most aesthetically pleasing basketball to watch. It's fun to see Steph and Dre run a pick and roll, 2 guys guard Steph, Dre dissect a 4-on-3... because he's been doing it so masterfully. And I think that's, you know, that's the key. If you're Portland, they haven't figured out how to guard Steph in the pick and roll at all yet. You know, game one, they were playing drop coverage on him, and Cantor just got annihilated off the floor because you can't do that. So game two, they were sending their big higher, but then you're creating these 4-on-3s, and you have Draymond, who is an excellent passer and playmaker out of the pick and roll as the roll man. So that didn't work either, and as they went to it late in the game repeatedly, much like the Warriors did in against the Rockets in Game 6, where they like just there was no answer. There is no good answer for this problem. But if you're the Blazers heading into Game 3, if you can't solve that problem, you're staring at best a 5-game series. So, Mort, if you're Terry Stotts right now, what would you do?
What can you do?
I don't know.
No. I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah.
Portland, they're kind of thin right now because of injuries. Mm-hmm. And they just don't have the defensive personnel, I think, to keep Steph or Clay or anyone really in check. And it's unfortunate. Like, you can talk about the drop coverage for Cantor, which it's Enes Kanter. So he's taking some steps defensively.
Yeah.
But when you talk about, you know, Steph Curry, obviously, you know, his weaknesses are going to be magnified. So what can you really do there?
Mm-hmm.
Dame isn't an all-world defender. CJ isn't either. Mo Harkless is okay, but you can't ask him to just shadow Steph for 48 minutes. And even, you know, even if you ask him to do that, they'll throw him in switches, like, you know, throw him in pick and rolls and have him forced to switch. You know, Alvaro Gamino is too large. Like, really... I guess the best bet is going with younger brother. Hey, you know Steph, you know what he did on the playground.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, get into his head a little bit. That's really the best I have.
Yeah. Well, and Seth was very good on both ends of the floor in game 2. I think he had 4 steals in total, and I want to say 3 of them were on Steph plays. He also He had the thing at the end where Steph is going to the free throw line, and I guess he hasn't. The stat pops up, and he hasn't missed a free throw in the fourth quarter or overtime of a playoff game since the 2015 finals, which is outrageous. That's 4 years. But then Seth goes up to him, like he gets the first one. He's like, hey, that's 70. And then Steph's like, yeah, it's about to be 72. And he just nails two of them. It's cold, so cold-blooded. And he had another comment after the game that was, it was just like the ultimate like big brother comment. Like, yeah, he played well and we won, so it was perfect. This is exactly what I wanted, how I wanted it to go. But to your point, yeah, I don't think there is an optimal answer. Like, it's not, Cantor is not the answer. Zach Collins, if he could stay out of foul trouble, maybe, but he had what, like 5 fouls in 9 minutes the other night?
Yeah. It was atrocious. He's got 7 fouls in 27 minutes.
And they got some great minutes out of Myers Leonard in game two, especially in the fourth quarter. He looked like he might be the difference and help them pull that game off. And then, I just think it goes back to Draymond on both ends of the floor. I just think he's been so locked in, especially since KD went down. He was a virtuoso in game two. And the Warriors hit this moment where they're talking about it afterward, too. Like, they've been through so much together that they have confidence knowing, all right, we're facing an 8-point deficit with 4 minutes left. We can come back. We're not going to fold. Mm-hmm. We just have to play really good defense and then run our bread and butter on offense. And they did that, and they stole this game. So, yeah, if I'm Terry Stotts, I'm almost just like 1-2-3 Cabo at this point. I just don't know that there's an answer to this Warriors team. I think you gave them your best shot in game two. Maybe you steal one of these two at home, but I would be floored if they're going back to Oracle in game five tied 2-2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tied 2-2, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. You know, I think best case scenario for this series is, you know, Portland wins this next one, then it's 2-1. Mm-hmm. Then it goes 3-1, 3-2, and then 4-2. That would be like the best you can really realistically hope to get, but even that I don't expect happens.
Yeah, I agree. Any other thoughts on this series before we move to the East?
No, just that I wouldn't be surprised to see next year that the Curry brothers share a uniform.
Oh, man. Someone pay Seth Curry. We've been on this for 3 years now. This is the start of this freaking podcast. Someone pay Seth Curry this summer. Please, God. He deserves at least, like, give him more than the biannual exception. Like, someone use your taxpayer mid-level on him. That's all we're asking.
Like the Golden State Warriors?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? They'll probably get, like, Cousins back on another taxpayer MLE, knowing them.
Thing is, they actually need someone because Sean Livingston is going to retire.
That's true.
And they really haven't had offense off their bench in what feels like 3 years now?
Well, I saw Ethan Sherwood Strauss of The Athletic had a column about Jacob Evans, their first-round pick, and they're apparently grooming him to be the backup point guard for when Livingston retires, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was pretty high on him last year, and he just didn't get enough opportunity this year, so maybe he'll... Yeah, and I saw that he'll play a lot of point guard in Vegas this year as well, so yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Also, cash considerations, Jordan Bell making a big impact off the bench in game two.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
That warmed your heart.
Look, I mean, I've been wondering all year. You know I have been wondering all year why Jordan Bell didn't get more minutes.
Yeah.
Like, he is extremely skilled. Maybe this is like a disciplinary issue where he doesn't play within the flow of the offense or defense or whatever. But, like, he is so much better to just have sitting there on the bench rotting away.
Yeah. I think there were some off-court things going on with him.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. All right, so let's go to the East, where
we also had a guy with some off-court issues. Maybe we should start with that first.
Oh, you mean Tyreek?
I mean Tyreek. Yeah.
Oh, we'll get to him later. Let's talk about actual basketball first.
Okay.
So similar scenario, kind of the inverse happened of the West, where in the West, the Warriors blew the Blazers out in game one and then close game in game two. The East, close game in game one. The Raptors took a 7-point lead in the fourth quarter. Giannis wasn't playing all that well. They pull it out because Brook Lopez turned into Splash Mountain. Game two, just a front to finish blowout the entire time. They were up, I think, 25 at half. Giannis is a monster. There was one play, especially in the fourth quarter, where Kawhi switched on to Giannis, and Giannis just, like, swatted him away like a fly. Like, it was... And this is Kawhi Leonard. Like, this is a defensive player of the year, and he couldn't do anything. Giannis just barreled right into the paint and did, like, a little spin move and got an and one. It was... I can't help but feel the same about both of these series, even though I know objectively this one is closer than Warriors Blazers in terms of talent level. Like, the Raptors have a lot of talent. It's just game one, you got probably the best Kyle Lowry game you're going to get in this series, if not the entire playoffs, and you lose that game. So much like game two with the Blazers, I can't help but feel more. The Raptors had a chance in game one to steal one, put pressure on the Bucks right away. They didn't. And now it feels like that was their best opportunity to make this a real series.
Yes. Here, I will agree with that logic immediately. I think this is going to be, at best for the Raptors, a gentleman sweep. And worst case, for Zip. The Bucks are just built properly all the way through. They have as many good bodies, you know, in terms of depth as the Raptors, but the quality of Milwaukee's depth is just better. Like, there's just no two ways about it. It's better defensively, better offensively. You have Ersan Ilyasova coming off the bench to just draw, like, a ton of charges. Yep. And, you know, you have Pat Connaughton coming off, you know, rebounding the ball, inserting his scoring prowess. Not this series yet, but he can. You have Sterling Brown. You have George Hill. Theoretically, if you want to go deeper, you can go with Tony Snell, Tim Frazier, DJ Wilson. Oh, and you have Malcolm Brogdon back, by the way, right, as well, who's been hot.
Been great.
Yeah, I mean, this team is just, it's loaded. And, you know, I know that people are going to be like, oh, let's not have this debate yet. But I'm picking Milwaukee as coming out, not just of these, you know, conference finals, but I'm picking them as my champs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to look too far ahead because, again, this could turn into a real series, and who knows what's going to happen with Kevin Durant, but...
Oh, even with Durant. I don't care.
Yeah. But without him, I mean, then either way, I don't think it's a hot take, but if Durant's out, I think the Bucks would go into the finals as the favorites, like Vegas odds favorites.
Yeah, yes, they should. Yeah. But, by the way, you mentioned the Kawhi, the Giannis on Kawhi play. Yeah. The sequence that stuck out to me was at the very beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. So Giannis goes up for this layup, it hits off the glass, and he just catches it and jams it immediately.
Yeah.
On the next possession, the Toronto possession, I don't even remember who the player was that he blocked. Was it Mark?
Yeah.
He just came in out of nowhere and had like a huge squat.
Yeah.
I think that sequence just set the tone for the game. If he doesn't do those two things, I think this would have been a lot closer. He just ate their souls within the first 60 seconds.
Well, and speaking of Mark and setting the tone of the game, Marc Gasol afterward comes out and says, basically, I played awful. I think he went 0-3 very early on in the game. And he said he set the tone negatively for his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
He's been struggling in this series. I mean, he's 3 of 20. From the field, 2 of 9 from three. He has 8 points in 59 minutes. They need more from him. But do you think at this point, I'm wondering whether this is a Serge Ibaka series rather than a Marc Gasol series?
It has to be. Look, Mark hasn't just struggled this series. Marc Gasol for the playoffs this year is averaging 7.9 points a game.
Yeah.
7.9 points per game, and that's while playing almost 31 minutes a night. He's been bad all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
He's not provided that lift. You know, when he was acquired by Toronto, you and I were we were just slobbering all over this idea of, and you know, putting Marc Gasol into this system. I'm going to say something right now. I would much rather have version of Jonas Valanciunas on the court.
No.
Compared to the 14 games Marc Gasol's had in these playoffs, remind you. Not necessarily what he's provided for, you know, during the regular season or moving forward. But looking over these past 14 games, yeah, I'd rather have Jonas.
They don't get past the Sixers without Marc Gasol.
Because of what? The defense?
Yeah. Gasol is one of the few guys who really frustrates Embiid on that end of the court. Embiid would have destroyed Jonas Valanciunas. There's no way.
Joe Embiid was sick anyway.
Yeah, for a couple games.
Yeah.
And they lost all the games he was sick. They lost all the games he was sick. But no, they won. They won the second game when he had the gastroenteritis. But no, I hear you in that they need more from him offensively. There's no question about that. I think he's looked tentative at times and hesitant. He and Tobias Harris are very similar in that regard, in that they're big trade deadline acquisitions, and it's not just like Nico is just like a plug and play guy. Mm-hmm. You're not expected to be a high usage hunt for your own type of shot guy. It's just like you spot up, you catch and shoot, that's it. You rebound, you draw charges, that's it. We don't need anything else from you. Gasol is acting as A, the defensive fulcrum, but B, they're using him at least somewhat as a passing hub too on offense. And then you're also asking him, all right, spot up, actually take threes if you catch a wide open shot. And he's looked hesitant to do that because he'll be open behind the line, and then he is hunting for a better shot.
And that's a problem. He needs to pull the trigger.
Right, yeah. The Raptors need him. They just need to not overthink. And I think they've been doing that, even dating back to the Philly series. I mean, they've just been missing a ton of open shots throughout all of the Philly series and this, the first two games of this series as well. And Nick Nurse afterward came out and said that. He's like, look, we had a ton of open shots, and if we hit some of those, it at least stems the momentum a little bit. I don't know, you know, it's hard to say that changes the outlook of a 22-point game that wasn't, you know, that was about as close as the score would indicate. I don't know that that makes the difference and evens the series at one game apiece, but I just think they're overthinking a lot offensively. And again, you get a great Kyle Lowry game in game one. Kyle Lowry was 4 of 13 in game two. You just can't count on that type of... He was 7 of 9 from 3 in game one. That's not going to happen again. But
I just want this argument because you can never, never criticize Jonas Valanciunas for thinking too much.
Yeah, but defensively, he would get smoked.
I was kidding. Yeah. It just means he's ready to pull the trigger regardless. Yeah, I get it. Well,
right.
No,
I mean, offensively, I'm with you, but defensively, what would he do against Brook Lopez? He'd be fish out of water.
You know, like Mark has been over the first two games, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, well, at least Mark was good against Embiid.
Yeah. All right, I'll give you the Embiid thing, but this series, and even not just generally the playoffs, you need a scoring punch. You know, coming into the playoffs, the Kyle Lowry's playoff reputation has been not great.
Yeah.
So you need something else. Like, obviously, Pascal Siakam, you expect some level of scoring from him, but he's been slightly off here. He's been inconsistent, which is fair. Yeah. Like, it's his third season. Danny Green is getting older. He's also not as consistent as he used to be. It's like, so who's that guy that you also need to, you know, get the ball to? Ibaka, right. You could argue, but he himself has a career of being inconsistent. He's been on a wave throughout the course of his career about going up and down in offensive production. Mark was supposed to be this key guy, this cemented, established star that could come in and just, you know, finagle anything he wanted to, and he hasn't. Yeah. That's not saying he's bad. It's just saying that right now, he's a liability offensively.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue with Siakam is he's been faced... He was great in game one against the Sixers, and then they put Embiid on him, and now the Bucks are guarding him with Giannis. Like, he's facing defensive player of the year caliber players, and that's... I think it's a smart strategy from these teams where... You know, look, you can't have Kawhi and Pascal beat us. We can't stop Kawhi. There's just nothing you can do. We can make life difficult on him. We can send double teams at him. We can force him left, but he's going to get his. Siakam, we can shut down.
Yeah.
Because he is not going to hunt for his own shots if we put these guys on him. And then you're asking, fine, Kawhi gets 30, but then you're asking, as you said, these inconsistent guys, You need at least probably two of Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Ibaka, Gasol, any of those guys to go off, and it's just not happening. And I mean, Danny Green's been streaky forever. Even Spurs fans got annoyed with him at times because
right,
like, he is the prototypical, in theory, 3-and-D wing, but his 3-point shot goes cold, and then you get frustrated with him because he doesn't provide much else. He's gotten better at creating off the dribble, but you don't see that as much in Toronto as you did even in his final season in San Antonio. So, yeah, I mean, I think, and look, the Bucks deserve credit here too. Their defense has been spectacular. Mm-hmm. I think Malcolm Brogdon in particular, for a guy who hasn't played in 2 months, basically, you know, this was his, game two was his third game back. He's put some nice minutes against Kawhi in particular, which I know in regular season even, his matchup stats against Kawhi were surprisingly good defensively, but just having the luxury of being able to rotate not just Giannis and Middleton on him, but also Brogdon is just, again, making things a little bit tougher on Kawhi. You just don't know who's going to guard you possession from possession, who's going to send double teams at you. I think the Bucks have just done a great job defensively in this series. And then game one, they missed a ton of open shots. Like, that, had they cashed it even a normal rate, that game wasn't as close as it looked. Game two, the floodgates opened. Mm-hmm. And now, if I'm Nick Nurse, I feel a little better than I do if I'm Terry Stotts, but not that much. I don't think there's a simple adjustment to make in this series where, oh, all of a sudden, like, we're going to cure our matchup issues. Do you think he should start Ibaka ahead of Gasol, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so, too.
You need the added flexibility. Yeah. Right now, it's not working with a big lumbering guy.
Right.
That's not how you match these Bucks, who are long but agile. Like, the agility is just murdering Gasol right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough, because I understand the idea is, in theory, Giannis isn't going to pull from deep very often. You want Gasol in there to just make life tough on him in the middle. But if Brook Lopez, I know, like, Lopez, you know, he had, what, 29, I want to say, in game one? Game two, he only has 6 points, 1 of 7 shooting, 0 of 4 from deep, and they win by 22. Because, you know, we're talking about their supporting cast here. Off the bench for the Bucks, Brogdon has 14, George Hill has 13, Ersan Ilyasova has 17, Norm Powell for the Raptors had 14, Ibaka had 8, Fred VanVleet had 5, Jody Meeks had 5. You're just not getting that much, and this is a problem that, again, has dated back to the Sixers series, where you thought going in, oh, well, that's one of the big advantages the Raptors have, is the Sixers bench sucks. They have two guys they can rely on, and the Sixers bench was more reliable than the Raptors bench for much of that series. So that has trickled over, and the Bucks, they're one of the few teams where, you know, the whole talk of the playoffs is, well, depth doesn't matter as much, rotation's shortened, as long as you got 6 or 7 guys you can rely on. The Bucks are like, nah, we're going to go 8 or 9 deep, and we feel great about it.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, why not? They have a tremendous amount of players that they can go to. And look, they're doing what they're doing right now with Eric Bledsoe hitting 27% of a shot and just 9% from three. So this just goes further into the point of Milwaukee being able to compensate for when guys are off. They have so many quality players on that roster that they can survive, more so than other teams, you know, players going through cold stretches. This is the mark of a great NBA team.
Yeah.
There is consistently someone to back up the backup. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Giannis was the only Bucks player in game two to play more than 30 minutes. And they won by 22. They've been declaring who they are all year. If y'all thought the Bucks were frauds for whatever reason, that debate is over. Like, they're just a really effing good team. They had a historical, you know, like, I think it was like the 14th best net rating of all time or something absurd like that. They have the best record in the playoffs. They have the best net rating in the playoffs. This is who they are. They're a very good team. So, you know, how you, a couple minutes ago, said you would pick them over the Warriors. That's not a hot take. They're just a great team.
The Warriors Tell that could to Twitter, them. Though.
Yeah, but, like, the Warriors could beat them, and that wouldn't be a surprise.
Agreed.
But the Bucks are probably the best team. I would say this Bucks team is better than the 2016 Cavs team that beat the Warriors.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Look, I would take this Bucks team over any LeBron Cavs team. Any. Yeah. Because the depth was just not there for the Cavs. Even with Kyrie and Kevin Love and all that, like, they were top heavy. Mm-hmm. Like, who do they have? Like, yeah, sure, J.R., Kyle Korver, Tristan. Okay, here and there, J.R. Smith, who could hold, you know, ones every fourth game.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
They have the defensive discipline in Milwaukee
yeah.
to punish the hell out of all those teams. So if I'm saying anything here, what I'm saying is the Bucks will represent the toughest test the Golden State Warriors have ever been up against. This is Golden State's Mount effing Everest. And people yeah. are not talking enough about this.
Yeah.
This is not some oh, let's see who the annual victim of the Eastern Conference is. No. Screw that. This is a real test.
Yeah. Yeah, Daryl Morey's going to have to update his little list of teams' records in the playoff against the Warriors if the Bucks make it through. Because I think the Rockets are going to have company in the actually gave the Warriors a real test category. Mm-hmm. All right, Mort, let's now turn to the draft. The draft combine is going on this weekend, but we haven't caught up on this pod since the lottery Tuesday. Your beloved Bulls fell to 7, which was obviously not ideal for them. There is talk that some team has promised Darius Garland. There is talk that it might be the Suns, maybe it's the Bulls, but he left the combine, I believe, without talking to all teams. And I believe he did not talk to the Cavs at 5, which suggests it's probably either the Lakers at 4 or the Suns at 6, some team right around there. Let's start with what do you think the best case scenario for the Bulls is at 7?
First of all, you're right about the big ass question mark.
Yeah, but I should say best realistic, like Zion is not falling to 7. John Morant's not falling to 7. RJ Barrett's not falling to 7. So, like, who would... Yeah, what do you think is, like, realistically, what's the best you can hope for the Bulls fans who are still out there?
So, if you're asking me what's best for Bulls fans, that is that they draft a bust, and then guard packs his head, ends up on a stick somewhere. Right. Because, really, that... Look, I mean, I've gone on the record of saying that... If it was up to Bulls fans to either be able to select Zion or get rid of guard packs and, you know, maybe part of ownership, they should choose that second one instead. Yeah. That's how bad it is. But ignoring the whole ownership management angle, you know, Bulls at 7, it's a rough spot to be in because after the top 5, this draft drops off. What you basically are hoping for is someone like Jared Culver slipping. Because there are a couple teams, you know, further up who are hungry for a point guard. And if they go with need instead of BPA, best player available, that might see Jared Culver slip to 7. And he is one of those guys. If he goes 7, that's another feather in the cap of the pick by the Bulls at 7 over the recent years in Lauren Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. Like, that would be a fine trio. It's not going to change much overall. It's still the Bulls. They'll find a way to muck this up because that's what they do. But that's probably the best case scenario for them. Kobe White would be fine. He's got a lot to work on. He's not necessarily a natural point guard. I don't think that's an issue though. Not in today's NBA. Yeah. Like old school positions are really dead in my eyes. I mean, I was talking about in the Bulls a couple of months ago. With someone on Twitter, I don't remember like who. Sorry, but we started talking about the non-positional lineup. If you drafted Jared Culver, like you could have Zach LaVine start as the primary ball handler, yeah, and then you could have Culver, you know, as your quote unquote unofficial two guard with Otto Porter, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter, and like yeah, you wouldn't have a traditional point guard, but who cares? Like, there would be enough players the ball could go between. You'd have enough playmakers on the floor as well. Like, why would that be a problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it necessarily would be.
Yeah. So I don't think positioning should be something the Bulls would be looking for. But, right. You know, John Paxson himself said that because they landed at 7, now they should maybe look at positions more so than best player available, which was like the worst thing you could have said.
What does that even mean?
That means that they're going after a point guard, Brian, regardless.
I know, yeah. I mean, because they very clearly are out on Chris Dunn. Like, they've come out and said, we're good at the 2, 3, 4, and a 5. So, which positions does that leave? But, yeah, I mean, you have to assume that Garland is gone, either to the Lakers or the Suns. I mean, I feel like that's the other best case scenario, is somehow he falls to the Bulls, and that's great. You live happily ever after. Is there a guy at 7 who you absolutely... I mean, you, who I guess you actually want so Garpax gets fired, but is there a guy who absolutely, like, do not draft this guy at 7? Like, Cam Reddish?
Yeah, no, say no to Cam Reddish. Look, I get that he measured out well. I get that there's a lot of appeal about his athleticism and his... Well, actually, he's not that athletic. I don't know why he's got that rep. But his body, like, he's long, he's agile. I get all that. And his shooting stroke is really, really sweet. But the thing is, he just produced so little in college. And he's also almost a year older than his fellow teammates, you know, Zion and RJ. I'm not in on Cam Reddish whatsoever. So obviously he should be the one to go 7.
I think he's going to be, which is just so exciting for me.
That's fine with me. Just burn it to the ground. I will say this. There is one guy that if, like, let's say a team like Atlanta at 8.
Mm-hmm.
Sekou Doumbouya from France. He's young. He's a prospect. So, you know, don't expect anything over the first couple of years. This dude would be good in Atlanta because he's got a sweet shooting stroke. He's athletic. He can handle the ball. He can pass. He can rebound. And he can defend. He's not just not at NBA level quite yet. But he will be fairly soon because his development is actually pretty sped up, I think. He's taking major leaps season to season. And I think he could be a really wonderful bridge between Trae Young and John Collins. Question is, do you go with him at 8 or do you gamble and go with him at 10 instead and see if you can pick up someone else at 8? That's like Atlanta is the team I'm looking for at this draft because they've got some options at 8 and 10. They can trade up if they want to. They can go with 2 guys, which personally I think they should go with that instead because it's not worth trading up in this draft either way.
Right.
It's just not deep enough. So I think you should go with 2 guys, whoever that is. Just hoping one of them should be Doumbouya.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I'm going to give a plug now because this is a reminder to everyone that Mort wrote, before the lottery, you did this whole NBA draft matchmaker series at the Basketball Writers where you just paired prospects with teams based on need. Yeah, so... I believe all 4 parts of that series are now out. Is that right?
That is correct. I just went completely against the wind because usually there's a big no-no in going against team need. But I thought it would be interesting to just explore what players would actually fit teams just in terms of what they needed.
Yeah. All 4. You were thinking like Garpax.
Exactly. I was channeling my inner Garpax.
And more... Since we're on the subject, are you tired of clickbait, ads, pop-up videos, talking head hyperbole, big market bias, and data selling? Are you tired of soap operas, wild speculation, and unnamed sources? Are you tired of padding the stats of CEOs and shareholders while your favorite content creators get paid pennies for their work? At bballwriters.com, they are too. That's why they created the Basketball Writers. At bballwriters.com, they concentrate on just the game and everything they love about it. The NBA, WNBA, EuroLeague, fantasy basketball, the draft, and many more corners of the hoops universe they're soon to explore. All in one place on a blazingly fast, clean site that lets you choose which writer to directly support while still enjoying all the content from their whole team. Elevate the conversation, elevate the game. They'll see you at bballwriters.com. And don't forget to enter the code THENBAPOD for 10% off your annual, monthly, or daily subscription. That is the THENBAPOD for 10% off. You can read Mort's whole matchmaker series there. And we got a bunch of other good stuff coming out about the draft, the conference finals, WNBA season just started. So lots on that front as well. The other draft question I had for you, Mort, you know, we had TJ on Wednesday. We talked a lot about like the very top of the draft, the lottery, Anthony Davis stuff, Mike Conley, John Morant.
Right.
I think let's focus now kind of on the other parts of the lottery, just because we didn't really hit on that the other day. Cleveland at 5. What do you think they do there?
I mean, they have needs everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So they just got to go best player available. If the Lakers are going to go with Darius Garland, which might be a thing, you know, Jared Culver would be right there for the taking at 5. That would make a lot of sense. Yeah. Some would argue that he wouldn't necessarily fit into that team because he's more of a 2-guard and Colin Sexton's more of a 2-guard. Thing about Culver is he tested out really, really greatly. Like, he was always listed at 6'5". He came in at almost 6'7", 6'10 wingspan. And he's also one of those non-positional players. Like, he can play the 2, 3, and on occasion, because of that size, a little bit of 4.
Mm-hmm.
You can just plug and play him. And he's a defensive-oriented guy who's got a lot of offensive potential, at least from inside the arc. He's not a great three-point shooter, but there's nothing really wrong with his release. His feet are just placed a little bit too weirdly. So I think if you get a shooting coach in there, it's probably a year and a half project, and then he should be fine. Mm-hmm. Not saying he'll be like an elite 45% knockdown shooter from outside, but he'll be respectable at the least.
Yeah.
So I think Culver would be a big, big get for Cleveland if he drops to 5.
I like that. I like that fit a lot. And the other thing is, I'm going to group Phoenix, Chicago, and Washington together. And maybe I shouldn't do this with Washington because they may be on the verge of hiring Tim Connelly, which means they will be a well-run organization.
Yep.
But until they do, I feel like all three of those teams, because they fell so much further down the board than their projected slot, I could see them potentially trading those picks for something. Now, Chicago, there's been the rumor that they are sniffing around Lonzo Ball a little bit. I think Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times is the one who first reported. Yeah, this was like a month ago, where he's like, if they fall anywhere from 3 to 6, basically if they don't get Zion or John Morant, they would at least call the Lakers and see if they have any interest. Would you be in favor of bringing Lonzo and Voldemort?
Yeah. Welcome Lonzo Ball and Voldemort. Burn the entire thing down from within. That's fine.
Good. Yep, that is the reaction I expected. Phoenix, I've seen a few Suns people on Twitter seem to be open to the idea of trading 6 and whatever salary matching you need, probably TJ Warren, whatever, to the Grizzlies for Mike Conley. I'm surprised by that.
I am too, but tell you what, while he doesn't fit with the team's age group, I would like it for something else. I would like that for them because he comes in with that veteran presence and he's a mentor.
Yeah.
Because if there's something that team needs, it's a leader. I don't know if they thought Trevor Ariza would be that guy. He ain't, man. So, Conley is. Conley is one of those guys who comes in and just, you know, lays out the table perfectly. Like, this is what I want. This is what I can do for you. I demand this and that, and anything else but that, and I'm going to be disappointed, and I'm going to tell you. I like that approach because I think they gave Devin Booker too much power too soon, and I don't think that's any... I don't put the blame on Devin Booker for that because he came in as a teenager. What the hell did you know, right?
Right, right.
Here was a team that just like, here, everything is yours. Here you go. No discipline. Take every shot you want. Literally. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that part was great for his development. So getting Mike Conley in, who can kind of ease him up a little bit, and also give him the ball in the right places and go, hey, look, when you're coming off that screen, I can hit you right here. That's a better shot for you, yada, yada, yada. You know, just sharing basketball knowledge. I think that could really do wonders for Booker.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that he would be a good fit culture-wise, but it just, especially because he has the ETO after next year.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I would be very hesitant to give up. I guess it really depends on what happens in the draft. This is not a move I would make before I'm on the clock if I'm Phoenix, because if the Lakers, I mean, for all we know, the Knicks or the Lakers are going to trade their pick for Anthony Davis or for Bradley Beal or something. Like, we don't know which teams are going to be making the picks at 3 and 4. I feel pretty confident that New Orleans, Memphis, and Cleveland are standing pat at 1, 2, and 5, respectively. So I can't predict that, like, some team isn't going to jump and take Culver at 4, Darius Garland at 4, whatever. Mm-hmm. If Garland and Culver are off the board, I like DeAndre Hunter a lot, but he strikes me as kind of a nice complimentary role player rather than necessarily a guy with, like, star upside. And for Phoenix, you already have so many wings that I just don't know if you need to add more to that logjam. Like, you've already got enough to deal with, and, like, it's already hard enough to find minutes for all of those guys. Adding DeAndre Hunter to the mix isn't going to help. So maybe then I would consider moving it, but I don't know. It would make me nervous if I'm Phoenix to give that pickup for a guy in Conley. Maybe he stays for, you know, maybe he opts in because he thinks he's not going to match that kind of a salary on the market next year, and he probably wouldn't, at least in terms of annual value. But Conley's also come out and said he doesn't want to be on a rebuilding team anymore. So I feel like if he goes to Phoenix, he might just give up the money. Like, I mean, the dude made $150 million, or he's going to at the end of this deal. I could see him opting out and then just leaving to go to a much more competitive team, take less money, because he doesn't want to go through another youth movement. So
Boston after they lose Kyrie.
right. So I don't know. Conley probably isn't the guy who I would target if I'm Phoenix. I understand the approach, though. I could at least see shopping that pick in the right circumstance. I just wouldn't do that before draft night, before I'm on the clock. Because I think Garland actually would be a nice fit for them if he does fall that far.
Well, Garland is primarily an offensive player, it should be noted. By the way, I have it the other way around. I don't think Phoenix should trade their pick for a veteran. I think they should trade one of their veterans for a pick.
Yeah.
And here's one of my crazy-ass ideas. How would a deal centered around the number one pick and Devin Booker sound like?
Like Devin Booker for Zion?
A package surrounding those two components, yeah.
Yeah, I saw someone, it might have been Kevin Pelton, I saw someone make the case, might have been Michael Pena.
Really? And here I thought I had an original thought. Okay.
No. Someone made the case that Phoenix should be a dark horse in the, I think they were saying for the Anthony Davis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One. That one I saw. Like, they should be. No, I'm thinking about, look, if, let's agree.
I don't think New Orleans gives up Zion for anything.
Well, what if it absolutely means that AD is staying put and you get a, you know, all-star caliber player back with, you know, in Devin Booker's case, has a ton of potential left in the tank?
Yeah, the team control thing. I think at least eight years of team control on Zion, you know, that there's that.
Can't complain about the team control on Booker either, though. Like, his contract is
only 4 more years, right? Or 5 more?
5, I think. 4 more.
Because this was this was the first year of his extension.
No. That kicks in next year. So he's actually a poison pill. So they've got an additional 5 years of team control with Devin Booker.
Yeah, that's not 9 years.
I get that.
You're paying up right away. He hasn't won anything. He hasn't shown that he can be...
No, I hear you, but what if ultimately that what you end up giving up, because you're giving up Zion for crying out loud, you have to match salaries to some extent. Yeah. I know that Dip Booker is poison pill, but like if you can give up like Solomon Hill, Etuan Moore in that deal, And then you run out of court. That's Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis, Devin Booker. That's at least something that will consider, you know, that will make AD consider to stay put permanently. That's a pretty good trio.
I don't know if that does enough to make AD stay. I feel like that ship has just sailed at this point.
If that is the case, then I agree with you. They shouldn't trade Zion whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, if there's a player out there where you're not going all in on, you know, an established guy who's got like 4 years left of his prime, yeah, then Devin Booker might be that guy. He's accomplished, but he's still, what, 22?
Yeah, 22 still. 23 in October.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, he's super young. I'm very high on him. It's just having Zion 4 years of a rookie deal versus Booker, his extension kicking in right away. I think in terms of asset value, Zion is higher than Booker.
No, for sure. That's why I said a package. I mean, obviously. But the thing that bothers me a little bit here is obviously, you know, we don't know where AD stands. Right. Like, if he doesn't care one way or the other, if he's just like out, like you said, mentally out, and just he's not into New Orleans anymore, totally agree. It should be Zion and nothing else. Mm-hmm. However, if there's a deal out there to be made that convinces AD to stay put, where you don't sacrifice the long term by, as I said, getting someone who's closer to, you know, end of prime years,
mm-hmm,
Booker would definitely make sense. The thing is, and that's another thing, we talked to Ricky O'Donnell a month or so ago,
mm-hmm,
and remember what he said. He said that Zion might not necessarily have the longest NBA career.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, and I know that you don't, you know, we can't know that for sure, but the logic is there. Like, he is a heavy body, and mm-hmm, he probably will always be somewhat heavy. That's a lot of mm-hmm pressure on those knees. So the 9 years of team control, which I totally get, but that could be negated a little bit if he starts physically declining after year 5 or 6.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. I mean, I do think we've gone collectively as NBA fans in general, we've gone a little overboard on the Zion hype. Like, let's see the guy play an NBA game before we declare him like the best asset in the NBA. I would still take Luka Doncic over him, I think.
Yes, I would too.
That said, I think you have a much better chance if you're calling David Griffin, getting him to listen on AD trade packages than Zion. Like, I just think, I don't know. I wonder if the fan base is just so out on AD that even if he did an about face and was like, yeah, actually, I'm willing to re-sign here. I don't know. It makes me wonder if they'd rather just have a clean start with Zion plus whatever they can get with it from AD, and then Drew as the veteran mentor, right, leader, whatever.
Yeah, and if that's the case, obviously I'm all in on that. Because they've, just the fact that they won the lottery, it provides them with so much breathing room. And here's the thing. You just mentioned Drew Holiday. He's been linked to the Bulls as well. Mm-hmm. Like, the Bulls are pretty in love with Drew Holiday as well. So if the Pelicans decide to go the route of Zion and kind of rebuild, maybe they're looking to get rid, or not get rid, but move Holiday for additional younger assets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you have the 7th pick right there. Mm-hmm. And something else.
Yeah. All right, let's do a few quick updates on things that are happening around the league. You already mentioned Tyreke Evans earlier briefly, so I don't think we have anything really to say aside from we hope he gets the help he needs. He was suspended Friday from the NBA for a violation of their drug program, and it's definitely not marijuana or performance enhancing drugs. That we don't know what it was, but it's something serious. He can apply for reinstatement in 2 years.
Yeah,
I would be surprised if he ever plays in the NBA again.
I won't. Chris Anderson made the return. Yeah. It is possible. And as we were reading on Twitter, apparently when you get banned by the NBA, you automatically will enter an NBA-run rehab protocol.
Yep.
which is pretty awesome, by the way. Which
I
mean, that's credit, you know, kudos to the NBA for actually having something like that lined up. That's pretty great. Mm-hmm. So maybe ultimately, this might be a blessing in disguise.
I mean, if only, if nothing else, hopefully it's a blessing in disguise in that, like, he gets his life back on track.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, like, the only reason I say I would be surprised if he comes back is because O.J. Mayo was in a similar situation a couple of years ago. And, you know, he got suspended during the 2016 offseason, and we have not seen him since.
Yeah, that's true.
And I believe he was a little bit younger than Tyreek when he got suspended. So, at this point, Tyreek's basketball career is an afterthought. It's just, let's hope. I mean, this sucks. Hopefully he's... You know, hopefully he's got a good support community around him. It's you know, I'm sure the NBA will do everything they can, but it's a personal choice. So hopefully hopefully this is the wake up call he needs. A couple other storylines that came out this week. One, the Cleveland Cavaliers have a new head coach. It is John Boeheim, who used to coach the Michigan Wolverines. I'm not going to pretend like I know how this is going to end. But do you have any sizzling takes on the Cavs' new head coach?
All I know is that he's 66 years old. Mm-hmm. That is literally everything, because that's what I managed to Google right before this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not going to play expert on this one whatsoever. I have no idea.
Yeah. And honestly, it's like we've seen the wide range of college coach success in the NBA. Some come from college and are like Brad Stevens and they're great. And some come from college and are like Fred Hoiberg and they get run out of the league in a couple of years. It's just, I don't know. He's been well respected in college, it seems like, for a while. I hope it goes well for him. At least he's got a long contract because he knows it's going to be a difficult rebuild for them. We'll see what happens, but I'm not going to pretend like we know how this is going to go.
He got a 5-year, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So he's going to be 71 when that's up.
Yep.
My God. All right.
Yeah. Yep. The other piece of news that broke, I believe, yesterday was that the Lakers will not be hiring a president of basketball operations to replace Magic Johnson. Rob Pelinka will carry on in his current role as general manager and will report directly to Jeannie Buss, but no Magic replacement.
Well, come on, say it. Just say it. We're both thinking it. Come on. Come on. I'll give it to you.
Please do.
Jason Kidd is getting such a raging boner right now.
Yep. I really, Anthony Irwin dropped Kittle Finger on us the other day.
I heard that was great.
I think that's all the only thing we're going to refer to him as now on, because all the dominoes are lining up for president/coach Kittle Finger as the Lakers. And is there like a Vegas line I can bet on? Like when he overthrows the whole franchise?
No, but like, we should get on the phone with Vegas and make sure that's set up.
Yeah, like coming. Yo Caesars, give me over under. I want like February 2021, I think is the safe bet. Because that's halfway through Vogel, his contract, right at the trade deadline, right. That will be the third year of LeBron's contract, so he could opt out that summer. So you know if they suck again this year or they don't. I feel like if they don't make the conference finals, he's going to start agitating about, you know, I'm not going to help with free agents. I'm not going to help with anything. You just
and do he's
you
36 and at the time. And yeah.
Yep. They're going to be a mess. I'm really excited.
But, by the way, when the picks were announced, you know, for the draft lottery, I just noticed something funny. So from 3 to 7, it's the Knicks, Lakers, Cavs, Suns, and Bulls. Yeah. So the most incompetent franchises in the NBA were grouped together. I found that hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. Pretty befitting of where all 5 of those organizations are right now.
Yeah. Well, except for the Lakers, you know, coming up 7 spots.
Horrible. It wouldn't be a lottery if the Lakers didn't get lucky in some regard.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see how they muck it up.
Right. The one they didn't is the one where the Sixers had their pick. It's great. And then the only other thing that we need to hit on quickly is the NBA announced the finalists for all of their 2018-19 awards. Your favorite, Mort. So MVP finalists are Harden, Giannis, Paul George. I don't think any surprises there. Paul George is probably the only question mark just because of his how he fell off toward the end of the season with the shoulder injury, but those guys were the consensus top three MVP for most of the season. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Paul George did not win, but
of course. I mean, yeah, he deserves to be there, Brian, because when you have to carry Russell Westbrook for a full year.
Oh my God. If Harden or Giannis win, that's fine. Go listen to our awards pod from the end of the regular season to hear where we stand there.
Giannis.
Yeah. Defensive player of the year finalists, Giannis, Paul George, Rudy Gobert. I was mildly surprised that Embiid wasn't there, but then I thought about all the time he missed, and also the Sixers were crappy or like mediocre defensively. So not the biggest snub in the world, but I hope it motivates him this summer and he comes back and kills everyone next year.
Giannis again.
Yeah. The sixth man, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, and Sabonis from the Pacers are the three finalists there. Rookie of the year.
My boy Sabonis.
He will be a nice third place finisher, yeah.
I don't care. I'm all in on the all-international, you know that.
Yeah. Well, you correctly identified him very early in the season as a leading six-man candidate, which you deserve credit for.
Well, thank you. It's just because nobody saw the Pacers. That was
right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Rookie of the year, Luka, Trae Young, DeAndre Ayton.
Obviously.
Right. I think we know where that one's going to go. Mike Malone, Mike Budenholzer, Doc Rivers for coach of the year.
Not even bringing that up as a discussion. Just what a complete and utter fail to not put Pop on that list.
Oh, no. All three. I mean, it's just the narrative. You know it's always the narrative.
I don't care. Look at that San Antonio roster.
I know. But look at the Clippers roster after the Tobias trade.
Look at the San Antonio Spurs roster for the whole damn year.
They had two All-Stars. Former All-Stars.
Yeah, former All-Stars. One All-Star, one former.
Yeah. The Clippers had Danilo
Gallinari
as a player.
And then they had virtually nothing else.
That's better than the Clippers.
They had two. Who had Tobias Harris and Boban, who's for comedic purposes. Okay. No, but they had Tobias for a long while. They had one of the best young rookies. Come on.
Yeah, but that's a testament to Doc Rivers that he was willing to rely on a rookie. That never happens. He should be a coach of the year just for that.
I'm saying that Pop's name should be on the list. That's all I'm saying.
I think I had him, because I did the coach of the year thing for the B-Ball Writers. I had him fourth or fifth, I want to say, but he was also outside my top three. I think those were my top
three. Blasphemy. But if I have, I mean, with those three, I'm going to go Bud.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you had any question about Mike Budenholzer's candidacy, the playoffs ended it. He's the clear coach of the year, I think. And then most improved, Pascal Siakam, D'Angelo Russell, De'Aaron Fox. Congratulations, Pascal. You have been mediocre in the playoffs, but you were great in the regular season. And I'm terrified of you.
We really need to talk about the whole, hey, let's put a former second overall pick on the list of most improved players. Like, stop. And a top five pick in De'Aaron Fox.
Right. And what were you second year jump.
Right, like, what were you expecting to happen here? Like, obviously, that's the whole point of being drafted high. It comes with a certain expectation, level of expectations in terms of progression and development. Like, this is dumb.
But didn't Oladipo win it last year?
Was it? Yeah, well, maybe last year. Yeah.
He's a former number two overall. Was he
not fifth?
No, he's number two. He was number two in 2013.
Oh, I thought he was fifth. Okay. Mm-mm.
Even still, that's De'Aaron Fox. But no, he was not. It was, I believe, that was the year where it was Bennett first, D Depot second.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, Porter, right, right.
Three,
right.
Cody Zeller, yep. Alex Len, Nerlens Noel. Good.
That
Lord.
Is true. Yep.
That's the year where Giannis went 15th. And let's read out Bennett, Depot, Porter, Zeller, Alex Len, Nerlens, Ben McLemore, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Trey Burke, CJ McCollum, which is the first good player I mentioned aside from Otto, and Oladipo, of course. Michael Carter-Williams, Steven Adams, Kelly Olynyk, Shabazz Muhammad, one pick before Giannis.
Ooh. And number 27, gotta give credit, though.
Rudy Gobert, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
what a crime scene of a draft. Oh, my
yes.
God.
Yes, it wow. certainly was.
Wow. Good. Good,
and
good, good.
we'll get another version of this draft next month.
Yeah, this year, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, D'Angelo, I have less of a beef with being on that list than De'Aaron Fox, just because, like, D'Angelo was a similar case to Depot, where you thought, all right, this is just who he is. He's like a 15, 16 point per game medium efficiency scorer, and then. This year, look, I know there are still concerns about his game. I wouldn't want to be the team that gives him the max contract that he's probably going to get this summer, but he very clearly did improve substantially.
Oh, for sure.
He made his first All-Star appearance. I have no problem with him being on the list. I would have a problem if anyone but Pascal Siakam wins most of
yes.
the player this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is Siakam. So what's the international score here?
Where Giannis, at least, in two. Sabonis is in one. Doncic. Yeah, you got an international guy in every player award.
Yeah.
And Masai, you got to figure, is going to win Executive of the Year, too.
We're taking over.
Yeah.
It's happening surely but slowly, Brian.
Don't tell Trump he's going to do Make the NBA Great Again. As his campaign
oh,
next
no.
year. On that note, we will wrap up there. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please check us out on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find all our episodes there. You can also find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, enjoy the games the next couple of days, and once I see John Wick 3, we can have a John Wick 3 review in the next
Thank
episode
you.
As well.
I'm looking forward to that, because I saw it today, and all this is not destroying the movie by saying Boban did great.
They had the clip of him on the jump, and I showed it to my wife last night, because she is completely out on John Wick, just because I'm so mad on it. I know,
no!
I know.
No!
So, I'm trying real hard to talk her into going tonight. We'll see if it happens.
Oh, come on, Alex. Come on.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. All right. Catch you later, man.
Later.